Good.
I'll probably leave in the middle of the meeting. I have enough,
Nice. So,
but you pushed up to the middle.
but Kevin, you're a student here, right?
Yeah.
Or you're not a student at NYU,
No, not at
right?
all.
But it's a collaboration with what's his name?
Nip.
Yeah, with Niv, Niv
Nip
Cohen,
Cohen.
right? Niv Cohen. And is there also a student of Niv's at NYU, or is it just Niv?
There are two students from my.
Oh, there's two students, so it's actually quite a team. Okay, that's wonderful. So let me introduce a speaker today. So Kevin, what year are you?
I'm a third year.
Third year. So third year undergrad at Northeastern. Kevin has been working with Rohit and Niv Cohen at NYU. So Niv has visited here a couple months ago. So as you know, he's very interested in these adversarial situations, and as you know, Rohit has been looking at the unlearning sort of discipline, right? This unlearning setting. And so the big question is, once you unlearn something, is that robust, or is it easy to undo? And so Niv was very interested in the question. I think that this also captured Kevin's imagination, and so they have some very, very interesting findings that they've been writing up, and I think making its way through peer review. What venue have you submitted that for peer review already?
I see him on then I guess filling Europe's next.
Okay, that's right. So, yeah. So we're looking forward to hearing about these really cool results from Kevin. And if you're submitting to NeurIPS, then there's a good opportunity to get feedback from everybody on ideas, on this research in progress, in this sort of interactive style. So Kevin, welcome.
I hope you guys give a lot of feedback because I think I have a lot of questions just about like different directions to take in terms of the research. But also, I'm just gonna get my water bottle really quick. Sorry.
Oh, so sorry.
Oh, it's okay. I'll just save the tea.
Is
Yeah, this is fine. Okay, so hi everyone. Welcome to my presentation on kind of uncovering what happens to race concepts in diffusion models. This was work I did with Rohit and some other people at NYU, like Niv Cohen, Min, and Nikki. So just as like a quick re diffusion refresher, I think the core idea really is that these diffusion models are trained to predict and remove noise from a, like you start with some random noise and over maybe 10 steps, it'll predict some noise to remove from this starting messiness. And so clearly we slowly begin to see our target image, maybe in this case, an image of a dog come out over these 10 steps. And so what's really interesting here is that the image is generated iteratively. So it's not like we're one-shotting any pixels. It's like we're all the noise is actually stored coming from like a 64 by 64 matrix. So it's like we start with some noise in a latent space, and then we'll have to pass that through a decoder to get our image. And so I think that has a lot of implications for interpretability within diffusion models itself. So I have like a kind of a quick slide on looking at interpretable LLMs versus interpretable diffusion, because I feel like you guys do a lot of work with LLMs here. I think it's really cool what you guys are able to do, given that LLMs, its outputs are token by token. Like you can really have some clear input to output mapping. And so like there's a lot of different tools you can apply in this case. Like there's like path, like I really thought like patching is really interesting. Like you can patch one aspect of the model and like see what the outputs, how the outputs change. And I think like it's really causal, which I feel like is one of the coolest parts. But when it comes to the fusion, we have a single image that is generated iteratively. So the semantics are kind of hidden. Like we might get an image of a dog, but can we attribute some aspects of that dog to specific parts of the model? It's kind of difficult to answer that question since semantics are kind of hidden in this output of diffusion models, which is noise. And we're also working in the vision space, so it's a little bit less like understandable in terms of the output, and like we might get an image that makes no sense at all. And so as a result, there's a lot less powerful interpretability tools that sometimes yield ambiguous results. Like still we can there's still a lot of interpretability work happening. And like I was looking at Chris Wendler's Twitter, and like he had some really cool stuff with looking at SAEs and like breaking down the features within diffusion models, but there's still a lot of work to be done in terms of understanding like the semantics within it. So this is kind of why I like to see concept erasure as a lens for interpretability. And I'm asking this question of what happens when you erase a concept in a diffusion model? And here it's the goal is kind of to understand how semantic knowledge is organized and accessed in these models. And so really, like, if I erase a concept of a car and I reprompt it with the same prompt, what happens? Like, how do these inputs relate to the outputs in terms of noise and the image that I get in the end? And what about when I try to jailbreak this erasing model? Like, what is the behavior that these erasing methods exhibit? So these are kind of the questions I'm asking. And so just as a quick refresher on what concept erasure looks like, generally it arose with this goal of preventing image generation models from producing violent or not safe for work content. So if we have our standard diffusion model, which was trained on these huge data sets of images from the internet, I could ask for a violent image like a man with a gun. I could get something like this. Or say we have copyrighted content, like let's say Van Gogh was copyrighted, I could ask for Starry Night. So one way you could approach this is by taking the data set that the diffusion model was trained on and just taking out all of your dangerous content so that you can retrain. But that's obviously really expensive. So most of the state-of-the-art concept erasure methods depend on fine-tuning here. So I can fine-tune my model for concept erasure. And if I reprompt with a man with a gun, I might just get a man. And if I reprompt with Starry Night, I might just get a night sky. So this is just an example of what concept erasure really could look like. And so for my research, I looked at a few different concept erasing methods. So here's one example. It's ESD by Rohit. And so the goal here is we have these diffusion models which are predicting noise, and it's conditioned on your prompt. So if I'm asking for an image of a car, it'll predict like sort of car noise. And this his fine-tuning process is basically trying to get the model to predict noise of a concept that's called like anything but Van Gogh. And so we're trying to steer the diffusion away from this idea of a car. And so if I ask for an image of a car from the original model, I might get this with a mountain and grass. But after going through ESD and some fine tuning, we might just get an image of a mountain and the grass without the car. And so this is kind of what this loss function represents. And just like one example of fine tuning for erasure. A different example is gradient ascent. And so often with these diffusion models, you can fine tune it so that you can get the diffusion model to consistently generate a concept, no matter even if you don't prompt it with like a car. So that's like what a traditional fine tuning process looks like. And what we can do is we can actually flip the sign. So if this loss function is meant to ask the model to consistently generate a car, and we flip the sign, we're doing gradient ascent here. And so the idea is we're trying to get the model to predict the opposite of a car. And so often this can lead to kind of unstable results, but it's pretty effective at erasure. And so this is just an example of if I reprompt it for a car with a gradient ascent trained model, I might just get random noise, and it's pretty messy. So these are just two examples of erasing methods, but I actually ended up looking at, oh yeah.
When you say effective at erasure, you just mean the thing that you asked for doesn't show up.
Yeah.
But I have a good algorithm for that too. It's called Glarat initialization. Right, you guys just go to torch.init on your model weights, and then
and you just like completely reset. Yeah. And so that is like with the erasure, there's this balance of like, yes, I don't want to completely, yes, I want to erase my concept, but I also don't want to completely destroy the model. And so that's something that we actually end up evaluating with erasure often, like kept in the back of your mind.
So yeah. Does that happen even if you have some strong regularizers?
So with gradient ascent, I know we tried doing some regularization, both in terms of like maybe you have some preservation concepts. And I think it's like there's not really a perfect solution there yet. I think mainly from what I saw, if you added some preservation concepts, you actually just end up you can preserve like maybe an image of like a truck, but then some other concept will probably just be inevitably destroyed. But then with regularization, it's like I regularize so much that the concept still exists. And so it's like a really fine line. And I think gradient ascent itself is just like a fairly unstable technique, but it poses a lot of interesting results in terms of like the interpretability side of concept erasure. So are there any other questions?
Yeah, I guess in my personal experience, you can sort of, instead of gradient ascent, you can add inverse like feature information on top. So that's more like a natural gradient.
Just can you explain more on?
Maybe we can talk offline.
Okay.
Sorry, I probably shouldn't just raise it.
Well, that sounds good.
Basically, there's a regularization method I tried.
It's okay. Really, really effective. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
that would be really nice actually. But yeah, so these are just two examples of erasing methods, and like there's a whole menu. So once again, if I have my target concept of golf ball, I'm trying to erase this. We looked at basically four different methods, and we split ESD into two different types. So ESDX, ESDU, unified concept editing, task vectors, and gradient descent. And so you can really see like the behavior of these erasing methods differs wildly. And like gradient descent is showing some interesting results. But really, I had some key questions I wanted to ask, which are, one, like, what is really happening with the concept within the diffusion model? Like, is golf ball truly being erased, or is it just being remapped to some other concept like person? And similarly, like, why are some of these erasing methods more robust to attacks? And so in the field of concept erasure, these erasing methods are called defenses, and ways to jailbreak them are called attacks. And so there's a lot of different evaluations that we can do to evaluate robustness. And so I guess I can start with kind of how we approach this question. We looked a lot at this adversarial evaluation for attacks. And so like just as another example of what we did, so we're trying to bring back the concept of English Springer Spaniel, and we've erased it. So this is kind of what the erased models look like. Now, what you can do is you can build a data set of a bunch of images of English Springer Spaniel and show that to your diffusion model. And this is a white box attack. So we have access to the text encoder and the UNet. And basically we do a optimization to search for a text embedding that will bring back our target concept. And so here with textual inversion, we can bring back a lot of different images, images of English Springer Spaniels for UC and ESD, and like something kind of weird for ESDU. But then when it comes to task vectors and gradient ascent, we see that textual inversion fail. And so we did textual inversion on 13 different concepts. And so something that we saw was like consistently like UC and ESD would be able to recover your target concept, but not task vectors and gradient ascent. And so with all this interesting behavior in mind, we were trying to understand like, why is this occurring? And like looking at the formulations behind UC and ESD, like, can we somehow provide a model for what's going on within these erasing methods? And so that's like the focus of the research.
Wait, one second.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to understand here. So the first row here is the output after you have applied the corresponding erasing methods, which all of them seems to be working.
Mm-hmm.
And now
on the same prompt, let's say.
Same prompt. And then you apply your attack,
mm-hmm.
and the attack is basically what you learn the tokens, or what do you learn?
Yeah, it's a text, and you don't even need to learn a specific. What they do is they like fine tune the text encoder.
Okay.
And it's basically like you're learning a specific embedding.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So like some people will learn the embedding and then do an algorithm to produce tokens, and like that way you can see a prompt.
Okay.
But this specific attack does not do that.
How many training images did you use?
I think it's 500 training images, and like it's like 3,000 steps for the textual inversion.
And you're literally learning like 700 numbers, just like one embedding for one token.
Yeah.
Wait, 500 images, 500 images of English?
Yeah. I think the embedding is a little bit longer than that. But you'll start with like one token learning embedding for that. Yeah.
768 dimension number.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can
you go read? I just wanted to complete. So you learn that vector,
mm-hmm.
the text vector, then you feed that vector in the model, and for this corresponding methods, for some of them it does produce it.
Yeah.
For the task vector and what was the last one?
Gradient ascent.
Gradient ascent is gone case. So for the task vectors, it's not able to recover anything meaningful in that vector. Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yes. Have anybody tried to kind of like include this in the training objective as well?
Can you say that again?
Include like you're trying to attack your erasing approach. But your erasing approach is supposed to be robust against this attack.
Yeah.
Like two different objectives. Each one is getting smarter simultaneously.
Yeah.
Have anybody tried that?
Are you asking like, so I think I know what you're talking about. Like,
yeah.
Has anyone done like an attack on your erasing method and then made a new erasing method that...
Both of these will kind of like train simultaneously. One is trying to attack your like concept erasing technique, and another... And your concept erasing technique is trying to erase it while also making sure that it is robust against this kind of attack.
Yeah, I think so. Well, I guess there's like that one method that was, it did textual inversion and ESD at the same time.
Yeah.
And it just like you did ESD with like, and then you ran textual inversion on it, and you got all those new images that textual inversion brought up. You do ESD again, and you do textual inversion again, and
Oh,
I
it's
guess,
kind of like an iterative
yeah,
process.
iterative process.
What I was thinking, okay, that's
Doing it at the
also,
same
yeah,
time.
what
What you
is
said
similar,
also exists.
but it also exists.
Yes.
And what happens with them?
We haven't tested. It just released like
No, they
3 weeks
just
ago.
released. Yeah. Okay.
You're on the cutting edge.
We
But
could have
this.
presented it sooner, then we could have done this project.
So, but the technique you're talking about is it's called adversarial and robust, training, and it sort of resembles the old Madri setup for this. Yeah, okay, that's good.
But how good is the iterative one?
I think it's pretty good. I looked a little bit at some of their numbers, and like their robustness is like really impressive.
Actually, okay.
And then I think they had like comparable interference on other concepts, which is like you're trying to keep that number really high. So it was really interesting.
Okay.
Okay, so with this in mind, like all this interesting behavior, we came up with a model for sort of what's going on with these erasure models or erasing methods. So here we have like some hypothesized classes, and if we imagine that the latent space of our original model is some like curved surface where these peaks represent my target concept. And so if any time I sample from within this peak using diffusion process, I'll get an image of a Gull fallback. So and if we imagine that these diffusion models are probabilistic, then the higher the peak, the higher the probability of generating this concept. So I prompted with golf ball, I get this diffusion path, I sample this hill, I get our golf ball image. So our first class of erasure method that we proposed was where this entire target concept distribution is destroyed. And so here we call this the destruction-based erased model, where now that this knowledge is supposedly lost during the diffusion process, even though it's guided towards where golf ball had originally been, instead, it is redirected towards some other high likelihood concept because this original hill no longer exists. And so, if we reprompted our hypothesized destruction-based model with golf ball, we might just get like a house. And so, here, given like the behavior of these models and like their formulations, we propose that gradient ascent and task vectors are destruction-based. Now, the other form of erasing that we proposed is called guidance-based erasure, and this is where the original target distribution is still within the model, but through the fine-tuning process, the guidance mechanism learns to redirect your diffusion to some random other concept. And so still, if we reprompt with golf ball, we'll get something kind of random like a bunch of kids. And we propose that ESD and UC fall under this category. Now, what's really, yeah.
So in your second method, when you destroy the peak, do you go to the immediate next peak?
So I guess you're asking about this one.
Yeah.
I think the idea of immediate next is like this. I guess it's kind of like a mental model, but the actual structure of the latent space of the fusion model is not quite like it's not as explicit as this. So like it's not like the diffusion would immediately go back to a semantically related concept like Kniswell, but
Okay, but like if I simplify this very much, for example, if I train my diffusion model on a CIFAR-10 data set,
Okay.
so I have like only 10
Yeah.
labels which can possibly come out based on 10 inputs. If I destroy the peak for one of the labels, then do I get to the next immediate peak?
I
What
think.
do you mean by next?
I mean, if there is like a probability of like each of the labels generating this particular image, and say if you have a plane, then you are getting a plane. If you have a bird, you're getting a bird. But a plane won't generate a bird. If I want a plane to generate a bird image, then would destroying the peak of the plane, like this method, would go to the bird?
Like next most likely.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
So I don't think so. I don't think it would go to the next likely semantic concept.
Okay.
But one thing that I would note here is diffusion models are trained to reduce the entropy loss. So, or reduce the energy. Or in this case, increase the probability. So, diffusion model itself starts from a very low probability region, which is a Gaussian noise.
Okay.
And they iteratively try to go towards some peak. And if your original peak doesn't exist, it would naturally try to go to the next possible thing that it could go to at that point. So at some point, the model has to realize that, okay, I'm going towards nothing. And it has to rearrange itself. But most of the time in Kevin's experiment, he did not find that to happen. Where most of, like, they always try to go to that destroyed region and give you like junk outputs. But hypothetically, if the models were trained really strongly, they should be robust enough that when suddenly you clip off this peak, they're supposed to go towards another high peak region. It doesn't have to be semantically close, but has to be in the path of the diffusion that it's already going.
Okay. So it's a possibility, but it's not like it will always happen.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. It's his hypothesis.
Yeah.
I guess what makes this like sort of story complicated, because mostly you're dealing with text and image models, right?
Yeah.
You're dealing with conditionals. So for example, on the right plot, what's truly happening is that you're distilling like the condition on, for example, concept A into the concept B. And I guess for the middle plot, like what it's actually doing is that you're destroying the mode, like with a fixed condition. You're not really, because you don't really have this distillation objective to distill concept A to concept B. You're really just trying to like remove the mode of the concept A. And usually what happens in gradient ascent is destroy everything within that condition.
Yeah.
So in other conditions, it works fine, but in that condition, particularly, you just jump up with garbage, right?
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily moving to the nearest memory sink, because first of all, the mode is already limited given the fixed condition. And also right now what we're seeing, maybe not necessary for text vectors. I think for that work, it does go to a different stuff.
Yeah.
But for gradient ascent, it really just destroy everything. It's just like to nonsense, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I guess this idea of like the memory sink is sort of like connected to that. Like, is this this hill for gradient ascent would just be like a bunch of noise and maybe not like an actual like semantic concept, which is like, I think that's a really, that's like part of something that I wanted to ask questions about at the end, like for feedback on. So I think we can talk about that at the end.
That's good.
Okay. But yeah, this is our model. And so now we're in this phase of, okay, we have this hypothesized model. How do we validate it? In particular, this question of like, how do we check if this peak still exists within our hypothesized guidance-based erased models? And so there's a few different ways that we can probe the latent space of our diffusion model. And so we examined kind of like three different angles. So first was like providing context in this idea of like, sort of like in context learning, but for diffusion. And secondly, the first two probes are meant sort of as like an interpretable way to look at the latent space of the diffusion model, where the second probe is really like, can we somehow redirect this diffusion path to get towards our target concept without like providing any adversarial training or like doing some sort of optimization, but instead just like nudging our diffusion path a little bit. So those are the first two probes. And the final probe is kind of like just what most attacks do, which is providing a few examples and then searching for it. So that's like textual inversion and prompt optimization. And so I'm going to focus on the first two probes, since I think they show a little bit more in terms of like elegance, but also they are able to be interpreted as like a probe into what's going on within erased models. So first I'll talk about inpainting. And the idea behind inpainting is we have some original image and we mask it. And then we ask the diffusion model to simply diffuse within the bounds of our masked blobs. So the idea here is that inpainting provides hints to the diffusion process, which are kind of encoded within the latent that we actually pass in. And so it's kind of providing this like guidance towards our target concept. And so what we noticed was that even though we have this concept of Van Gogh art, and you prompt our destruction-based and guidance-based models with Van Gogh, we'll get like these random paintings. But if I ask for an in-painting example with perhaps gradient ascent, we notice that gradient ascent just fills it in with some random art, like some random texture pattern. But if I ask a guidance-based model to do this, we'll get like an actual filled in Starry Night painting, and it's like following the pattern within the context of the image. And so this is really interesting. And we have some more examples in the next slide where we notice that some of these like hypothesized guidance-based erased models are still showing that the concept still resides within our original model, or within our model, despite having supposedly erased it. And it didn't really take that much to bring it back. We just provided some context and provided a prompt, and that's all it took. And so this really does show that within our guidance-based models, we have residual knowledge that didn't really take much to search for. But when it comes to our destruction-based erasure, we noticed that there's a little bit more robustness. And we did this pretty systematically across 13 different concepts still, but I think art was really the one that showed the most interesting results.
How do you distinguish this as like quantitatively still showing that information of like still having that context? Because I could argue that anyone who's never seen Starry Night before, who's just seen enough art, could create a more reasonable infill than either the gradient or set and a task vector, and that could look closer to like what UCE produces. So that's not exactly like the original. It's a reasonable infill.
I see. So it's like not just how do you like, I guess the quantification that we looked at was just like clip scores, but it's like fairly subjective. And so we also did this with objects as well and like disimplus. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess like to play devil's advocate, like one other experiment I would test out, I assuming you're using the text prompt like Bengal or
yeah.
Starry Night.
But yeah.
One thing I would test out is like just use the prompt and painting. Like
yeah,
that's
yeah.
completely unrelated with what's been used in text prompt.
Mm-hmm.
To see whether gradient ascent method can infill. Because I feel like the hypothesis that maybe the method itself, by self-attention mechanism,
mm-hmm.
we can just like sort of like hallucinate
I see.
What's inside, like given the outside context, right?
Yeah.
So maybe UCE and ESD, like they also kind of forget about concept of angle, kind of just in paint according to the stuff outside. But the reason why it's generating reasonable stuff, because all we know, like gradient ascent method, after you run gradient ascent, the model just shout and yell at you and scream at you of generating gibberish if you see that piece of text prompt.
Yeah.
So I feel
yeah.
like
he tested it.
I did look at that. And I think it was generally like similar results, but the for the guidance based models, like there is like a lower success rate with the inpainting. But that is like something I don't know if I quantitatively measured like that on across all of the like our whole entire systematic search, but that was something that I also looked at.
Okay.
Yeah, these magnitude questions are always really hard. Like, you know, that's right. Like, is it really something about the subtle geometry, or is it just about shouting really loud?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we should.
How do you calibrate this?
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, like as an Appalachian study, we're not Appalachian, but like, yeah. Oh, that's actually a good idea. Okay.
Also, a philosophical question, right? Like, if the model is not able to even complete a painting, it's obviously trying not to do something versus it's still being able to finish a painting says that its general capabilities might still be present in the model.
Yeah.
So we don't know like how to exactly put this. So we made it like a diplomatic statement, but it's still a open question for us.
So like if you had something that is totally not painting related, like, you know, can the gradient ascent model do in painting properly, if you have, I'm not sure, like a house or something, can gradient ascent like impaint a house? Right? I think is, you know, I feel like there's this ratio. Like if you take UCE, it'll be able to impaint a house, no problem.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's very, very specific.
So another suggestion
yeah.
on top is if you
yeah.
take a house, try to impaint it with the prompt Van Gogh, would gradient ascent like clearly not draw anything? Like maybe it's just trying to shout out loud that I have to break myself because this is Van Gogh painting, so I should not do anything else here.
Mm.
It's something we should also test.
Yeah.
It's like these are all
ablation
experiments.
Okay. But yeah, so given that this inpainting probe showed these results, kind of the next step is asking, okay, what if we don't really provide any hints, but instead start from totally random noise? Like, can we still recover our target concept as well? With like minimal nudging and like without any adversarial training as well. So
sorry, quick question. Yeah. I missed, so to do the inpainting probe, you just like take the space image and noise it a little bit and then have the model run?
It's like... the inpainting is the outside image is completely kept itself, it's like a completely original, and we just fully noise with what's within the box. And then we pass the entire image into the diffusion model as the latent.
Is that the right way of doing a painting? Is that so? No. Well,
so every time you do a generation at time step x1, you replace the outer boundaries with the noised version of your actual image and then continue your generation. So it starts with complete Gaussian noise in painting. You generate an image with the prompt, and then at time step x1, it has like slightly less noisy version of your original noise. Then you replace the outer boundaries with your original image, added the same amount of noise. So it's like you're nudging.
You just pretend that what the model predicted on the outside of the boundary happens to always be going in the direction
of this painting,
of the real image.
Yeah.
I see. This is a kind of patching, right? Like you have to run the model twice to get the noise from the...
It's only once. You don't have to...
Explain.
Sorry, so I was thinking, like, you've got... you start from some... You have some prompts. You start with some initial noise for the base image to generate that image, right? Or no?
No, this is like real image. This is actual Starry Night image. We take a real image.
Okay.
We cut a hole in it.
Yeah.
Actually, we take a real image, we add noise to it 10 times, gradually to make it complete Gaussian noise.
Yeah.
Now we start from the Gaussian noise, let the model generate the next step.
Yeah.
Except the model doesn't know it's drawing the exact image, right? So we'll nudge it by replacing its outputs with the original time step.
So you didn't run it twice.
I ran it only once.
10 times, and now the other time you're actually doing it.
This is not modeled.
You're just adding noise.
It's just plus addition noise,
yeah.
Forward noise.
Standard version just adds.
Yeah. Do you have any questions?
We can move on. I'll ask it.
Okay. So the other probe that we looked at then is starting without any original image in painting, but rather just starting the completely random noise. And what we can see this model showing is that your erase method will deterministically push your diffusion path to something besides our target concept. So here it'll always push it towards maybe like a church if we ask for a golf ball. But the idea is, can we inject noise during the diffusion process such that we kind of shift the diffusion path off of its original trajectory to something random? And so here what we do is, within the context of diffusion, you can think of noise as sort of like expanding the field of view of, or at least expanding the search space that we're moving along within the diffusion process. And so at each time step, we'll add in some scaled noise. And so actually practically what we do is there's a hyperparameter within scheduler, and we'll do a search across these hyperparameters, run this multiple times, and get the best image after running it like 40 times. And so once again, if we look at this erase concept of golf ball, we can see that we don't see any golf balls from either of the methods. And if we apply this noising probe to a destruction-based model, we might get like a golf player. But when we apply this to a guidance-based method, we can get multiple different types of golf balls. And later on the next slide, we'll have some classification scores. But does this probe make sense in terms of intuition? Okay.
So we have one question here.
Yeah.
So when you add random Gaussian noise, you change this parameter eta.
Yeah.
And that's like changing the valence of the noise which is being added.
The magnitude.
Okay. And for each step, you have a different eta?
No. Oh, sorry. Each step, we have the same eta, and then we run the diffusion multiple times with like eta equals 1, eta equals 1.3, and we get a bunch of different samples.
Okay.
And so once again, we have a bunch of examples, and here we have like the way that we quantified beyond just clip scores was classification. And so this is like a little more objective in terms of like how we are measuring the success rate. And so what we notice is that like with normal prompting, perhaps we might get like less than 5% of the concept reoccurring within our models. But when we add this noise, inject this noise into the diffusion process, we can get up to 30% concept recovery, despite which is like a 10x of what it was originally. And so this is really like demonstrating that, and we're not like injecting a whole optimized set of noise, but rather just like subtly shifting the diffusion process. And so it's really suggesting that the original concept still resides within the diffusion model. And that with a little bit of nudging, we can counteract the guidance mechanisms within our guidance-based erasure to bring back our target concept. And But when it comes to our destruction-based the ratio, it's the success rates are a lot lower. And we're seeing that even with like gradient ascent, it's like less than 3%, which is really interesting. Yeah, it's like I found this really interesting.
It's a ball.
I know Sheridan's looking into like how text works with diffusion models, which I thought was really cool because I saw a lot of really weird text within these experiments, but that was fun.
Very nice.
But overall, so these are like two of the main probes that we used as we were trying to validate this model and classify these erasing methods into two different classes. And really, it's like the first step into building this framework for understanding and analyzing future erasing methods. And the hope is that by understanding the behavior, like the mechanisms, we can improve future erasing methods, because this really is still a really open question where erasing is like certainly not perfect. I mean, we saw like even still, none of these models were perfectly 0% when you prompted normally. And there's also this other half, which is, what is the interference on other concepts too? Like what we would expect though, is that with destruction-based erasure, like if we're completely nuking the concept, it should likely affect nearby concepts too. And so this is something that we see often. So here's, it's a table where the models are the columns and we have different prompts for the rows. And so what I did is I prompted for golf ball, and we see that there's erasure. But if I also prompt for a nearby concept like tennis ball, we can see that a lot of methods will just generate like something similar, but not quite expected. Like I can get tennis balls back from like ESD and UCE, but like with this run specifically, I just got like tennis players and like something random. And so it's still not like a perfect mechanism for erasure. And even with like distant concepts like car, we can see some like impact of gradient ascent and like test vectors is showing something, but overall, like erasure is definitely not perfect. Yes.
Sorry, I may have missed a bit, but like, so in here, what are you erasing again? Are you erasing golf ball?
Just golf ball.
Golf ball.
Yeah.
And like, in terms of like representation, because like it makes like, I mean, if it's mostly on the ball, then it kind of makes sense like why for a nearby concept, because they also named as ball.
Mm-hmm.
That it might erase.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what if it was just like tennis and golf, do you like see them still with the ball or not?
Oh,
in each one of them.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I actually don't know if I've looked at that before, but that's like a really cool, it's kind of like one of the prompting things is like, oh, if you erase car, like does traffic still bring it back? But this is like with the interference side, it's like, does this impact tennis as a whole?
What is the metric on the previous slide which said, what is that metric exactly?
Oh, sorry. This is, I didn't explain this. This is the classification score. So basically it's, we use like a ResNet classifier for objects and then just see how often it classifies, like this contains a golf ball and like.
This is a binary classifier that you trained or?
Just a pull it off. Like, so I think it's just ResNet.
Is golf ball an ImageNet class?
Yeah.
Oh, it's okay. So then you just ImageNet, that's the classification retrained.
So we trained on 10 ImageNet objects and 3 artists.
There's a subset of ImageNet called ImageNet
A. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, we work on it.
Yeah.
Just quick thing, I think it would be good to have an additional kind of baseline of just like what the accuracy would be without any of these concept erasure methods.
Oh, right. I do have the number.
Oh, okay. Do you know like roughly what it is? I think
this is like 80% for just like the normal model. I guess this is also around like 80. I actually didn't do noising on like the original model, but
it's probably in a good
way. Yeah.
But
so this is basically like how the research that was done in like looking at classification. So it's really an interesting question, and like there's a lot of things that I'm still really interested in exploring. Like really the mechanism was like hypothesized and like, we look at the behavior, but I'm interested in seeing if like we can really tease out how these erasing mechanisms truly work. And it's something I'm really personally interested in is like this idea of visualization. Like how do we visualize the change to the latent space in like maybe an interpretable way? Like if I have a standard model and then my erased model, like can I compare what maybe like what the weights look like and do some sort of like take a slice of the latent space and see what's going on there? Like I'm really interested in that. And then finally, there's this idea of like memory sinks. And so this is something that I kind of talked about in the beginning, like where there's like certain concepts that are constantly being brought up when you prompt for a car. Maybe like sometimes it'll go straight to noise, but like there's other things that we saw that consistently were brought up. And we wondered if like those are memory sinks. which is a concept that comes from neuroscience, where like if you erase concepts within like a mouse's brain, like they notice that there's a like set of the neurons that like form a memory sink where if you trigger the concept again, like that memory sink will be activated. So it's really interesting, and like we did some experiments, but I don't know if they're quite strong enough to like make a strong claim. So I was hoping for feedback with that at the end. But thank you.
What did you? Oh, go ahead.
Oh, sure. So just since you're talking about trajectories, I was curious because like when you're doing this image create generation process with like a baseline model, it takes like, I don't know, 10 steps or something.
Yeah, 50 steps for us.
50, sure. Have you tried looking at if you save that original chain of 50 images and then just kind of give segments of that to the concept erase model? So for example, if you give it the 49th step, will the concept erase get rid of the golf ball, or will the golf ball still be there?
Yeah, I think we looked at that, where it was like, yeah, can the if we give like the first 10 steps of the original model and then pass it into the erase model, what happens? I think generally it was pretty messy in terms of like, yeah, you generally it was difficult to bring back the target concept. I didn't do much with like the last 40 steps. I think I've seen pretty clearly like the last 10 steps, you don't see a lot of change in terms of like because diffusion is like coarse defined, like if your structure of a ball is there in like the first 25 steps, it's probably not going to get erased in the last 25. But I kind of gave up on that for a little bit, so maybe it's time to re revive it.
Any intuition on why the noising thing works? Because I understand the picture of infilling thing, but why does adding noise knock it back into its original course before the edge?
I mean, I think there's at least the way that I saw it, it's like there's at least I think so. We run this like 40 times. The way that I've been seeing is like if this is a high probability concept, it kind of has like a pull. And so by introducing stochasticity into the diffusion process, like maybe there's a radius around this target concept that if the erase model enters this the radius, it'll just get pulled into the actual target. And so like by introducing stochasticity, like there's a probability that it'll just get like pushed into that radius, like gravitationally pulled into it. But that's less like the way I see it.
That's actually a very good question. So for methods like UCE and concept ablation, we try to have an anchor concept for erasing. So if you want to erase a car, you usually replace it with a garbage truck or something. And I think most of the times we tend to use concepts that are semantically very similar. So the assumption is probably even in the data space, they're closely there. Maybe we should test this by changing the semantic distance between the anchor concepts, like car to sports car, and then but increase it to like car to like some mask or something. And then still try to do your noise probe and see the would the accuracy go down, or like the efficacy of your noise probe go down? Something we could test.
So in this, your t is equals to 50.
Yeah.
So do you have some insight on at which iteration these features start to develop, starting from the random Gaussian noise?
Oh, I see. Oh, I had a GIF. I forgot to add it in of like the noising process. I mean, I think just like qualitatively, I feel like if you don't see any shape by like times of 10, then like you're cooked. So around like really towards the first half at least.
And does it depend on the type of diffusion model that you use? What are you using currently?
Oh, we're using Stable Diffusion 1.4.
Okay. So do you think that this depends mostly on the model architecture, or it is more of the training process, or?
Listen. Like that specific behavior, I feel like it's I can't say like 100%, but I would believe that that's the case for most models. But I don't know if coarse defined diffusion is the standard for like every type of diffusion, but I think generally that's the case. So I would expect if the last 15 steps or last 50% of steps are for like finer grain details, then concept duration doesn't really care that much about it. Thank you. Then, if you guys have time, I have some questions about this idea of memory sinks. I don't know, you guys are totally free to go. But this is something that one of the guys at NYU was looking at. And it's basically like, so we have, if we erase with gradient descent, we notice that like there's this dog that comes up, like if we erase English Springer Spaniel, anytime we prompt with English Springer Spaniel, it'll always bring back this dog. So we were kind of curious as to like why this was occurring and like ways to quantify it. So the way that they approached it was they kind of measured this idea of like concept, like deviation in terms of like as you train gradient descent across multiple steps, like what happens? And they notice like, oh, with gradient descent, like the clip, average clip embedding stays within like a certain tight realm of like radius, but with other methods, like it starts to expand. And so I mean, I think for myself, I'm just interested in like what experiments could we do with memory sinks in a sense to like see what's really going on within maybe like gradient descent specifically. But I don't know if you guys have any suggestions around this.
Maybe we should explain what memory sync is. I don't think
Okay. I guess it's like within if the idea is that we're destroying the concept, like the distribution of English Springer Spaniel, and like we're going towards some nearby concept in the diffusion path. The nearby concept might be like the nearby concept here would just be this English Springer Spaniel, and it's constantly pulling in any diffusion that comes along its way. At least that's the way that I'm thinking about memory sinks. And so this is it's like just a small like qualitative behavior we've noticed with like gradient descent specifically and like this concept of English Springer Spaniel. It might just be an artifact.
I guess isn't like in most cases you prompt it and just generate like all red like every or
Yeah, so for yeah, for like golf ball, I think it kind of depends on like the level of erasure I did with a certain specific concept. But like gradient descent can like with garbage truck too, like we got it to do just like a generic truck instead of like specifically like so then it's no longer classified as a garbage truck all the time.
I see. So I guess you need to tune the steps
Yeah, it's like
and
tuning the steps
learning
and then
rate.
maybe we'll find like some memories. It's not always the most consistent.
Got it.
And also like gradient descent was pretty unstable. And if you do one epoch extra or
Yeah.
10 training steps extra,
It's
you're like,
slow, right?
yeah, it like explodes.
Yeah.
So.
Then there's this other graph that they built as well, which was like looking at this. So this is also something they did where basically across training steps, they would get the like they would generate 25 images and then get the clip embeddings of all of them. And then they would see like so at time step zero, they're comparing the distance of this average from your original concept, which is like if I erase Van Gogh, like the distance away from like semantic difference away. And like this is also another graph that they generated. Which I'm like trying to understand what are other like evaluations we can do that would make it more interesting or like more robust. As of right now, I think there's like some questions I still have about the message that it's showing. So.
Isn't this kind of showing the opposite of the memory sync concept you were showing previously? Where here things are spreading out
Yeah,
as things get erased.
I think this is like deviation, I think is a interest. Yeah, deviation is an interesting word. I think here it's like this is a supposed to be a distance from the concept of Van Gogh or like distance from the concept of the English Springer Spaniel. So I don't know if that changes your interpretation or if it keeps it the same. See.
No, wait, so you're for gradient descent,
Yeah.
you're claiming that English Springer Spaniel always goes to that dog. In that case, shouldn't the centroid deviation just flatten out at some point?
Yeah. I think, well, in this case, it's like this if this is like English Springer Spaniel is like clips magnitude away of like four from the cute dog that we see, then Yeah, it's like a this is a weird graph to interpret. Yeah.
And I guess another question here is like you're sort of assuming the memory sink is sort of like it's a really just like a single memorized image.
Yeah, instead of like
instead of like a distribution of images. Yeah. But why is that particularly needs to be the case?
I don't think it needs and I guess it's are you yeah, like
I agree the phenomenon is interesting.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be the case.
It doesn't necessarily this phenomenon doesn't necessarily tie to the memory sink hypothesis.
Well, I don't think we're making an assumption that it's only one image. It just happened to be the case with GA. Even for ESD or any of the other methods, they usually tend to do everything else, like the empty prompt, which usually are like high probability classes, like houses and trees.
Exactly.
So even then you see that the centroid sort of gets flattened out. It's because the distribution is fixed now.
Okay.
It goes into that empty prompt distribution.
Oh, got it.
And the distance is always constant.
I see. So basically, it's sort of like moving to
some
distribution.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So got it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not too sure how to like expand these results. And I've been talking with him from NYU and just like, what are ways that we can make this stronger? Like, I was thinking about doing something about the doing textual inversion attacks across different steps and like seeing what the results there were, but. Yeah, at least right now it's just like an interesting set of graphs, but I don't know if they really have like the strongest message. But, yeah.
So I think right now the hypothesis you're trying to tackle is really hard. It's like about the optimization process and like differences in the concept erasure optimization process. Have you thought about kind of stepping back a bit and just focusing on the robustness of these methods? Because I think you have pretty clear results that like GA is more robust to these attacks than other methods.
I see. Yeah, I think we also were talking about that, like, what if we just present it as like an interesting analysis on like different types of robustness, like GA as a method itself. But
yeah, Kevin had more attacks. He just didn't show it here. But he tried multiple adversarial attacks too. But his idea was more of taking this attacks and thinking of them as an probe for interpretability. Like, what does that attack success mean in terms of how the model is erasing a concept? But yeah, you could take the results from it and also conclude that about like the robustness of these methods too.
Yeah, because I think the interpretability part is the weakest part, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like that's the one I'm trying to make stronger. I don't know how to exactly present that message, make it more persuasive.
So you have these two pictures that you're trying to tell the difference between. I feel like, you know, you could also hypothesize other mental models, and maybe this is the challenge for the interpretability thing, right? Because it's not clear that these are the only two alternatives.
Yeah.
That there are, right? I mean, don't you think that like another alternative is the booby trap alternative, right? Where, you know, you have your lost surface or something like this, and somewhere, you know, near your target concept, you have some new, you know, high probability step in your diffusion process or something like that. Or something that an intermediate layer computes, and then you've put a booby trap there, right? Which is like if you step on this, then I will do some computation and I'll do some lookup in MLP or something like this that will put an infinity in, right, to the thing, so that you're not totally incapable of drawing anything after this, and then, you know, maybe one model for erasing is I'll put the booby trap in there. But then the question is, okay, well, maybe that still doesn't remove the concept of your dog. Like if somebody could find where that booby trap is, and maybe they can remove it, right? Like I feel like there's these other possible, right, alternative theories as well. And you could imagine, I don't know if there's others, right, that there's this fairly unconstrained space, right? Yeah.
Wouldn't the optimization-based attacks reveal the booby traps? Like, you're giving 500 images in this case. of the concept you erased, and you're optimizing for the right.
Yeah. So what I'm imagining is that the optimizer
is also fooled by that movie trap,
or it might not have enough time or steps or something like that optimizer. So like once you have like an infinity in a model, then it's not clear that an optimizer can recover right from it.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. But it could be that there's some other technique for like finding the infinity and then chopping it out. Right.
Yeah, I like the suggestion somebody had. What if you give take a real image, noise it just a little bit to 10 steps?
Yeah.
And maybe if you do across like 1,000 steps and notice at which point the model starts collapsing, maybe.
Oh, interesting.
Maybe that's the time step to start looking at for these traps.
Yeah. Yeah, booby traps. Yeah, and it's also like this question of like, even if we have these models, like, how convincing is it really? To present it and like try and validate it in this like interp space for diffusion. Like that's like the big challenge for me. So, you know, the thing that like some of these things from like Ekdeep and you know, these kind of people, they'll like try to make these, make a convincing case for this type of picture by literally doing a huge grid search over, you know, a three-dimensional space of, you know, changing different things and then showing that you have these different regions, right? And so, you know, one thing you could do is like, so you have your cartoon of what you're imagining. Is there some grid search that you can do where you could literally show, yes, look, it looks like my cartoon, right? This is like, there's this region here of where the concept is, and then there's this other region where it has this other behavior. And yeah, like you know what I mean?
For 2D, maybe we can, for a toy model, that should be possible.
Maybe, yeah, maybe for a toy model, right? Or you know, yes. Or even on your big model, like, but just, but not like the whole space, but like, maybe can you find two variables that you can adjust or something like this, where you can do a grid search over them and say, well, you know, obviously we can't look at everything, but when we take this two-dimensional slice over, you know, some search space, we see something that looks like our picture, right? I think that if you were able to, like, you're if you're into like visualizations, right? If you were able to find some visualization of some search space, which is more evocative, then that would be, right? Like these are all like one-dimensional scans, right? And then it's like hard to, you know, conceptualize. Okay, well, what does this one-dimensional scan tell you about this lost landscape that you're sort of imagining?
Yeah,
but maybe a two or a three-dimensional scan.
Cool. Right. I'd love to do
over something, right?
Yeah. Can you go back to your slide with the two hypotheses? Yes.
I'm actually curious about this one. That why do you think it's scalar instead of vector? Like, we could assume that it could just be doing some, like the actual outputs of a grid search, it'd be a vector direction that the diffusion model is doing in terms of the adjustment to the image at each step, or at least in the diffusion models I've worked with. I don't know if that's universally true of diffusion models, but it's doing some steps. So each point, if you have two variables you're altering, it's the vector, it's an arrow. And that doesn't necessarily turn into something that you can have a hill climb over, because in theory that vector field could be not conservative. You could have like a loop or something just to get stuck going through random noise or something, which I don't know, the gradient ascent method, some of those strange outputs could be possibly, is it possible that it's not converging to some hill and it's just exploring some random space infinitely?
So the vectors that you're talking about are gradient log probabilities of the data that can likely occur in the model's outputs. So the peak is actually the probability, which doesn't exist. It's as hypothetically assuming that there is a probability distribution.
Right.
But all the model does is those arrows it's trying to optimize or like what do you call it? Approximate this peaks using the arrows that you're talking about. So that's the score based energy functions.
So it's got approximating it. A conservative vector field, like so it's approximate. Okay.
So yeah, these paths, right, that you just follow, like this one 50-step path up this thing, like can you get a grid over it if you, instead of doing this path, like you alternate it with paths from the base model that where the thing isn't erased, and you're like, okay, well, if you were willing to draw a golf ball, then you would go this way. And then like, can that give you a grid that you can, I'm not really sure. Right? I'm just trying to, like, what would be the, yeah, what would be like, I feel like maybe there's some visualization method where you interleave using the base model and the erased model.
So yeah, so each point in this plot is actually a high dimensional vector, 64 times 64 latent.
Of course. But it's also a one-dimensional vector of timestamp t equals, you know, 0.3, right? You know, where that's the only parameter is varying and the rest of the system is just fixed neural network doing its process, right? And so, which is why it's like a line in the end, it's a path. And then, anyway,
I assumed these were just synthetically generated. Is this how do you generate these plots?
Oh, this is just a cartoon, right?
Yeah. You just made, yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
you don't have like some crazy process.
That would be,
like,
that would be so cool.
No, that's what I'm trying to get at, right? Yeah, like if you have some crazy process for creating a thing, then you'd be like, oh, look at this. You can see.
Yeah.
Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, like, why not do the try the naive thing of like project down to two or three dimensions?
Yeah. Yeah, from your million dimensional lane.
Yeah.
Yeah, so right, that's nice. That's maybe it's super naive.
What about instead of projection, like a diffusion model that goes into a latent representation to like a vision transformer that actually projects it up to the full dimensionality of the image?
Well, because a simple projection is easier.
Okay. what was your initial idea?
Well, it's like what, like a 64 by 64 latent?
Yeah,
so you have your time, you're traveling through time, you just gotta. Whatever 64 by 64 is like, what is that? 256 or
no,
512? It's not huge.
Yeah. It's
4096.
Yeah.
And then times, it's actually, is it times 4 for each patch or I'm actually whatever it is?
Times 4 for each patch, yeah.
Yeah, so it's about 16,000 or whatever, right?
16,000. Like
so 16,000 down to 2? Just do a PCA?
Sure.
You know, who knows, right? You know, I don't know.
I like it. Yeah, maybe we should try this once. Like, just run a bunch of runs and see, capture all of this into two-dimensional vectors and plot how it looks like.
Okay. So, if you just like did that for like two, I don't know, like 10 concepts or something, and you saw like clustering.
Like,
mm-hmm. Of the concepts or something like that.
That's
cool.
That's
a good idea.
And if it doesn't work, that's fine. You didn't already have it anyway, so
that's a good idea. I was thinking about something similar, but it was with like some. It was with like a different paper that was looking at like decomposing the unit, like. Getting some latents with it was like it's actually really interesting and it was like doing some like SVD with the unit getting latents and like making a graph from that.
Yeah,
I think that'd be really cool. Okay, we're gonna try that and hopefully it'll make something blobby or not blobby but like interpretable.
Yeah, I mean you've got a lot of degrees of freedom making these visualizations, like what is your big dimensional space, yep, that you're varying in, what's your reduction,
yep,
method, and so maybe somewhere in this design space there's some interesting visualization.
Yeah, I'm gonna just send it. That sounds really cool actually.
Thank you.
Where did these two ideas come in from? Like, do you already have these like, preconceptions in mind, or did you do the experiment and come up with this?
I think it was frequency.
What? No.
No? Oh, okay.
Because in my head, like when you taught that class, I thought everything worked like this, the second drawing.
Yeah, we thought this.
Yeah.
But then your noising experiment started giving different results. So that's when this came.
And I was always
curious. But I'm not convinced that this middle drawing isn't a booby trap. Instead, right? There's like this other booby trap model.
Yeah, now that you say, maybe not. Yeah,
right. It could just be that the golf ball's still sitting there, except that you put this bomb right next to it, and so, it keeps on stepping on the bomb.
So this is the way I see how unlearning works sometimes, especially when you're optimizing using ESD or concept ablation or all those sort of things. I think we are trying to change this, the arrow over there, at what direction it's supposed to go. Maybe we're not really messing with the loss space. I don't know how we start messing with the model's knowledge of how the loss space should look like. Or are we already doing it? I don't know. I'm starting to think we are maybe just trying to steer the model in certain ways.
That's how I view it.
That's how you view it, yeah. How do you even get to editing the loss spaces?
I think, at least for concept ablation, it's really just a distillation objective, right? If it's a KO loss between like the concept, the target concept, anchor concept, sorry, right?
Yeah.
Naming is good. You're really trying to distill your target. Whenever the model sees the target concept, you want to generate the anchor concept. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I guess depends on whether you're trained with the reverse or forward KO, like some behavior would change a little bit, but in general, you're doing just that. Yeah. So that's why I feel like concept ablation, can just throw a textual inversion to it, it will probably just break because I feel like this distillation loss has a lot of like drawbacks where there are a lot of loopholes where you can just like find spacings where you can just go back to the original denoising trajectory.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you start, so you said that you previously did experiments where you start with a half noised golf ball and then you finish it, right? So do any of the erasing methods, you know, succeed at frustrating the model's ability to complete a golf ball that's already been half
drawn,
right? Like it half denoised, or do they all say, oh yeah, I know how to finish this, right? Because isn't that so, like that's like the difference between these two pictures, right? It's like, oh, I can't get close to a golf ball, so therefore, but the model still knows that a golf ball is very similar, so if you get pretty close to it, then it'll complete it, right? That's sort of this, you know, one of these pictures, right? Or is GA really just like a golf ball's not a thing? You get me really close and I've got to like go somewhere else. You know, do you remember?
I'm pretty sure.
Have you done GA experiments on the
beam? I don't remember if we did GA. I think we just did
that recently. So
yeah,
I see.
But it also kind of depends on the concept. Like I did it again with Airliner and it was really good. Like Airliner was consistently brought up. So I would be interested to see what happens with gradient center.
Yeah. Yeah, and generally we found that models methods that are much more robust to adversarial attacks are the ones that destroy the model most. Like gradient ascent and task vectors almost destroy the entire capabilities, even if you erase a golf ball.
Which is this unfair thing, right? It's like,
exactly.
You know, it's like, oh yeah, I can. It's easy for me to erase things. I can use a gun. I'll erase everything. Right.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So
then, how do you make this comparison in a research paper without offending people, without saying, "Oh, this is not even."
It doesn't do anything. It just destroys the whole model.
That's it.
No. Well.
But then you're also comparing robustness, and then these are the methods that come to the top. We have to somehow acknowledge it that they are the most robust.
Well, I guess the good news is that.
But you add the random baseline. You say, you know, what we can also just add, you know, such and such.
random noise to every single weight of the model, and then these things perform similarly to the random baseline. that make any sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, we should know that.
You could also just like include that information about how well the model maintains its old performance. And that could give you like a Pareto front for like what's the trade-off between concept erasure and maintaining performance.
And the random baseline.
Yeah, instead of just showing numbers, maybe we should plot them on.
Like the curve of like robustness versus
performance.
Specificity versus robustness.
Yeah. And there's another side of the conversation too, which is like there's some robustness that like is only achievable by gradient ascent though too. Like when we did do ESD for like 1,000 steps and it just like completely breaks the model and then saw if we could do textual inversion. Like that did sometimes come up. So like we could still bring back like airliners with textual inversion even on a completely broken ESD model. So like that was like another side of the story that was really interesting. But like with gradient ascent, like that's not possible.
You should also talk about potential signal of what weights you're updating for.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, because I guess like gradient ascent test vectors are applied to all weights, but ESD and UC are just applied to cross attentions.
Which is like 1% of the 5%. I don't know. You said that in your paper, multi consent. 5%.
I think around that ballpark. Like if you do cross attention.
Well, that's also an interesting aspect of it. Like we did end up looking a little bit at just applying gradient ascent, so cross attentions and non cross attentions, but I didn't pursue it that much. It's very interesting. I really am interested in this toy model thing though. Doing the 2E. I don't know exactly what that would look like, but I should just like send it and see what happens. So, thank you guys for the suggestion. That was really helpful.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you very much. Enjoy.